You're listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on bingemedia.net. And now, the Binge Aftertaste.
Matrix Revolutions, released November 5th, 2003. Budget on this was $110 million. Box office $427 million, and it's directed by the Wachowskis. Boys, I don't know about you, but with how much we've dragged this out, it feels like we've been talking about Matrix for about 6 months.
Yeah, a little bit.
But we're here. We're talking the final movie in a trilogy. Is it the final movie of the series? Well, we'll talk about that at the end, but Here we are. We're in the conclusion of our Matrix series. Pretty exciting, boys.
That's one word, sure.
Yeah.
exciting to end.
Let's put it down. Oh, okay. Way. Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah.
Let's talk about our feelings going into this one. I got the feeling from our last podcast, you guys were kind of let down by the last film. What were you expecting going into this when it came out? When was it? 7 months later?
For me, I was definitely looking forward to it just because it's, you know, the end of the trilogy. Wanted to see how everything wrapped up. You know, going back to last podcast, I was a big fan of how it ended on a cliffhanger. I thought that was pretty cool, even though that the movie wasn't. But I had high hopes for this.
Yeah, I mean, I was, when it first came out, I was super, super excited for this. I felt like Reloaded, you know, it offered a lot of a lot of ideas, a lot of questions, a lot of possibilities. I remember very specifically being pretty convinced that it was a Matrix within a Matrix kind of thing, and I was excited to see where that was going to go. I was all about seeing this when it first came out.
I was excited as well. As I said in the last podcast, I was a big fan of that second one, at least from a visual standpoint. I thought it definitely had stumbling blocks from a storytelling standpoint, but I was pretty excited back then. I don't think I even looked at any early reviews or anything. I will say I wasn't as excited for this as I was for the second one, though. It was just like, okay, it's going to conclude the trilogy, but hopefully you have a good story to tell. I don't think it's possible to be as blown away as you were by the first film. But with this, I was hoping at least a good conclusion was in order. That's what I was hoping.
Yeah.
So, all right, we're going to go ahead and get into it then. So at the beginning of the movie, there's a big explosion of gold code. It dissolves into green code. And then we end up with the remaining crew concerned about the whereabouts of Niobe and Ghost. What? This is a very weird start.
Yeah.
You know, what strikes me off the bat with this beginning is while the first two began with spectacular action scenes, this one is almost all expositional.
Yeah, there's a
which is weird because like the rest of the movie is like heavy on the action. And it just kicks off with a lot of talky-talky. Sorry, Jack.
No, it's all right. And there's also this weird like avoidance of the main characters. I don't know. You'll see it pop up a couple more times throughout the movie, but there's all this focus put on, you know, Jada Pinkett Smith and all that stuff, which, if I remember correctly, was all in the video game, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was her and Ghost.
Yeah, yeah, which is fine, but I feel like that really fucks over your audience, you know, and like, for people who don't play games, to just, like, be introduced to something that happened that now is pretty important to, like, what's going on in the story. It's just a little too fucking wide. The story's already, it's just casting too wide a net at this point.
Yeah.
And we're already fucking 2 minutes into it.
When you incorporate, and we talked about this last podcast, but when you incorporate video games into your world, that's fine if it enhances it. But if it becomes a part of it, that's when it starts becoming a problem.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I don't know that that was necessarily advertised as being that big a thing at the time. I was a little bit younger, so I didn't have an idea of how this movie was sold. But I find it odd that they would put so much importance on shit that was in the video game, which might not even necessarily be most of the target audience for what this movie was at the time, and it's a weird choice. I feel like maybe they were banking on the fact that, you know, the technology and the development of movies would move more towards this kind of thing, but I don't know, just strange.
Time is running out as the machines are getting closer, and Seraph calls, saying they must come at once, and then we cut to Neo in the weird spot of being at a train station, sitting beside a little girl, and I'm thinking, how the hell did we get here? And I want to go ahead and say, I had completely forgotten about this whole rescuing Neo out of a coma storyline. Mm-hmm. Watching it now, I'm thinking, cut it the fuck out.
Yeah.
Again, and this is the whole fucking story of these sequels, but good idea. There's a cool concept here with, what is it, the train master? The train keeper?
Train man.
So, I like the original concept of something that's communicating between, like, the real world and the Matrix world, and there's something there. But I don't really understand why the Merovingian is such a big deal. I don't know how to describe it properly. To be honest with you, I'm at a total loss for words. It's just, like, there's a lot. There's just a lot of backstory that the first sequel didn't support here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just don't know why there are so many assumptions made that the audience is just supposed to be fine with it all.
Yeah, it was just like a thinner slice of the overall idea in the first movie.
Right.
Which made you really look forward to the sequels. And, you know, the whole coma thing, like, really rubbed me the wrong way, too. Because I had completely forgotten about that. You know, Garrett, when you're just saying, yeah, and he was in a coma. And I started laughing because it sounds so stupid when you say it out loud.
Yeah.
And, like, you can see how, like, this subway station is a really good idea. The idea of the train man is cool, but they're just like, how do we get there? You know, the coma just being like the vehicle to get to this cool idea.
Right. And I really like Bruce Spence. I mean, he's a cool character actor. I think most people know him from The Road Warrior. He's the fucking mouth of Sauron in the extended Return of the King cut, which is one of the best fucking side characters in that movie. You know, it's a cool concept. It's just like, it doesn't gel properly for me.
And this is a character, the train man. You're right, Jack. He's a cool character actor, but this is a character that we haven't met until this film. So why introduce a character in your conclusion of the trilogy? It's just a bizarre choice.
And also, just to not to totally like jump around all over the place with this character, but they do a couple of weird things with him. So Trinity, Morpheus, and Seraph see him on the train. And he reacts really strangely. He's like, oh, get away from me. Like, what are you doing? Like, I don't understand that. And then he gets to the train station and he knocks Neo the fuck out. And that, and then, like, while he's at the train station picking somebody up, in the next scene, which predates Trinity and them seeing him on the train, he's in this, like, club with the Merovingian, which mm-hmm. seems like a weird thing. Like there's, like, a 10-minute span where he's just in like, almost every scene with nothing to do. It's really weird.
And I thought I thought the whole setup for his character was that he doesn't leave the subway station.
Sure.
Because he has this whole thing like, I'm the god down here, you know? I don't answer to anybody.
Yeah.
And then, except for the Merovingian, I'm going to go to his club too, hang out.
Yeah.
Like, what?
I need a banana daiquiri. Get out of my fucking face.
Is that what the train man would drink, a banana daiquiri?
I feel like it because it didn't look like he's brushed his teeth in a while, and I feel like sugar is high in his diet.
Yeah, probably.
Even his teeth are green. And I'm going to get to the greenness in this film, but my God, they just way overdo it in this fucking movie.
Well, that was the best part of like the first movie was that it was had like this nice filter. It was kind of subtle, but I mean, they really just fucking hammer it home here.
Absolutely. Morpheus and Trinity reach the Oracle, but she is changed. And with the outside reason being the other actress died, I can understand that. You kind of have to write around that, but couldn't you, like, show her from behind and show, like, maybe Smith taking her over and turning around to be something else? Or I don't know. It was a weird way to incorporate this. And they, like I said, I understand, you know, the actress died. There's no way around that. This Oracle, she's just as long-winded as she gives the placement of Neo being with the train man who works for the Merovingian. She gives all this whole backstory and everything. But she's just not as warm as that last one. And it's a problem for me.
Yeah, not as warm. That's a great way to put it. But and also her explanation of why she looks different, which I thought was cool to include, because like, oh, we have to address that this is a totally different actress. She's just like, I changed. I don't get it. Like,
okay. Exactly. Yeah.
She just keeps on saying that over and over.
I just have a couple problems with it. Like, first of all, lack of warmth. That's a problem. But also, she speaks in a way with like this sort of cockiness to it that if it was the last actress I would be fine with, but this actress, I don't know. I know she's playing the same character, but I don't feel that she's earned the things that she does in this movie. You guys are right, like there should have been some kind of scene where something is passed or somebody, a power, or there are other ways to do it, I guess. I don't know the best one is, but
and just spending all, you know, so much time with Neo being in a coma and, you know, Zion trying to figure out their defenses and getting ready.
Right.
I mean, it would just take a line or two, or maybe like a 2-minute scene, like a transistor scene where, you know, you see her make that transition to what she is now. Cause she, like, you know, the way she delivers lines is just like very matter of fact. You know, again, there's no warmth to it. Whereas I feel like the Oracle before, like, she at least did things with a smile and, like, was kind of seemed very clever.
Granted, it, you know, you got to work around it. Actress died. It's, you know, obviously it's a problem, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But the first movie has the right amount of, like, dangling the carrot in front of your face for all of that, like, philosophical stuff. This movie is, in the first, in Reloaded, are just, they're leaning so much on you buying into the philosophy of shit that they're forgetting about everything else. I just feel like it's too much. It doesn't work for me, and she's kind of the start of a lot of those things. So
we're introduced to this Indian family program that speaks in love. And is there really any doubt where the story is going to go from here when we're just talking about how much these people rely on love to survive and all this? Like, there's really no doubt.
The love idea is kind of set up in the first one.
Yeah,
because of what the Oracle tells Trinity,
absolutely,
you know, about her being in love with one, and that's how she knew it was going to be him. And even Smith, to a certain extent, in the second movie, is talking about, like, you know, belief systems that humans have and how they're feeble-minded. I guess that was more in the third one, but, you know, he does kind of set up, like, that back and forth.
The train arrives along with the train man proclaiming that down here he is God, and this goes just to what Jack is saying. Like, he's God down here, but where is he with the club? Like, where's all this metaphorical bullshit going to take us, you know? A semi-fight ensues in the parking garage, and then we get a bizarre gunfight with, I have no idea who the hell these people are, but, you know, it's like this club hell, whatever it is. Right away, I'm fucking bored with it. What the hell? How did we get here? Again, and why are these people all dressed up in sadomasochistic fucking outfits that has nothing to do with the behind the scenes of what was going on with these directors? Like, why? What is going on here?
I mean, I think my problem just stems from the fact that I've already had one movie. This is the second one now with the Merovingi, and I still don't know what he is. I don't understand what he's supposed to be or what he's supposed to do.
And just like the kind of wink and nod that they're going back and forth between Club Hell and Neo being in limbo. Come on.
Yeah.
And then the whole conversation at the train station with, you know, he's talking to this program who has a wife and a child, and all of a sudden they have emotions and feelings. Like, what are you trying to say here? Are the machines supposed to be sympathetic? How are you going to fucking justify that by the end of this movie? You know, that's also ultimately a big problem I have with the end of this. When you break it all down, is that, like, just nothing is resolved.
The whole point of the gunfight is to pretty much end with Trinity holding a gun to the Merovingian and giving her a little bit of power in this, but it doesn't make any sense in this context. It just doesn't. You're giving the Merovingian, like, okay, so where is he? And, like, instead of, like, killing him or something, like, I don't know, why are you just having Trinity hold a gun to his fucking face? It makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. I think they spend less time on Neo and Trinity and Smith for a long time in this movie. I mean, it's a lot of Zion shit.
Yeah.
But then you forget, what's the real threat? What's the real villain? Because in the second one, the architect's like, oh, this is like the sixth version, and, you know, you're a little different, but we know how this is going to end. So if that's going to end, and I know, like, you know, it's playing out different with the machines invading Zion and what they want to do. But really, the big baddie of it all is Agent Smith, because he wants to destroy both worlds. We don't spend a lot of time with that. It doesn't really come across.
Yeah, so
I don't think.
You're actually leading me to something that I couldn't really put together until you just said that. Lord of the Rings, right? There's a really good thing that Peter Jackson did with the Eye of Sauron. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about it, in all three of those movies, you've got Saruman. But Sauron is, like, really challenging to get across as an idea, because he's not, like, a physical being.
Yeah.
But they do a pretty good job at showing you the power of the ring and what that means and the effect it has and what it's doing to the world and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, in The Matrix, the first movie, Agent Smith is part of the system. So it's good versus evil. It's very clearly delineated, and you can follow that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Reloaded, in Revolutions, Smith is the enemy of two warring factions. So I feel like, it's like you said, it doesn't clearly define the stakes or why we should care or what's going to happen if either side wins or loses.
And the machines in the second two movies do nothing to try to mitigate him as a villain.
Right. But I guess the existence of the architect, like, maybe that proves that there's awareness and meaning behind Smith's existence. It's very messy. It's just very messy.
Is it just me, or could this whole first hour have been cut? This whole first half hour? Yeah. If this is all they had to do, then what the hell was the point of the entire last film?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You're not wrong, man.
It negates everything that happened in that last film. It's weird. The train finally shows up with Trinity, and I don't care how blazing Don Davis makes this score, the chemistry meter between these two is still at a fucking zero.
It's awful.
It's really bad.
I don't remember it being so bad, because I love these two characters, and I like seeing them together. I mean, we mentioned that last podcast, but it doesn't get any better.
This is really weird. Like, you're supposed to care for this reuniting of these two monster characters in this series, and you don't.
No.
So Neo goes to see the Oracle with the little Indian girl there as well, and Neo wants answers as to how this will end, why he hadn't known about the architect, and how he can separate his mind and body without jacking in. She just replies, like, one way or the other, the world is going to end. Okay, so you're still speaking in fucking tongues. And without the warmth of that last one, it's just like, okay, now I don't like you. While you were intriguing last time with the way you were speaking, now I just don't like you.
Right.
Yeah. You
know? She also says that Smith is the antithesis of Neo, and he has the power to destroy the world. But then Bane wakes up. Remember this guy? Then Neo gets unjacked. So what does this little Indian girl represent, and why is Weaving doing the worst evil laugh since Dr. Evil? That is a terrible fucking evil laugh he does.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I always thought that the actor who plays Bane did a pretty good job of capturing Hugo Weaving's, like, his cadence and the way he talks and everything.
Yes. Yeah,
possibly. That was pretty good.
That's probably why he got hired.
Yeah, even with the little girl. That little girl doesn't... Her character is supposed to be important, but they don't really... explain it all that much. I mean, her dad does to a certain extent.
That's right. So okay, so just like try and map this out for me. All right, so machines are the bad guys, right? Okay, machines create programs.
Mm-hmm.
Now program is supposed to be sympathetic because it has a wife and daughter. What the fuck? What, like, what?
Yeah,
that's so fucking complex and complicated.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck is that supposed to be?
Yeah,
like, yeah. I guess nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
I have no idea. That's a question left in the air because nobody knows the fucking answer. I don't think the Wachowskis even know the answer, which is the scary part.
Yeah.
Smith does call the Oracle mom. So what does that mean?
It's more fucking crazy bullshit. When he says that line, you know, I had forgotten about that. When I watched it today, because I watched it today fresh, that fucking line just pissed me off. I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me here.
Well, wasn't there a line, I don't know if it was in this chunk of shit of a movie or the last chunk of shit of the movie, where they're explaining, like, if he's the father of the Matrix, then she's the mother, and then someone's like, the Oracle. I don't remember who said that, though.
That's all well and good, but, like, there's just nothing explained. You know, for a movie that's so fucking dialogue heavy with crazy exposition that leads nowhere, it strangely still requires a lot of explaining, and it just doesn't have any of it.
They talk themselves into a circle a lot of times.
Yeah. Yes.
And also, one other thing that pisses me off, fucking Morpheus in this movie. So, we haven't really done much with him yet, because he doesn't do anything in this movie. Even when it's his time to shine as, like, a fucking co-pilot, he basically just sits there and eats some Funyuns. Like, he does nothing. It's so fucking stupid.
Yeah, I mean, for a character who was so important in that first film, like, in this one, you're right, he's kind of an observer. That's pretty much what he does. And you know what else he does? He's there to say, I told you so, at the end of the movie. That's pretty much what it is.
Yep.
He's there to feign a couple fucking romance subplots and then just, you know, kind of sit and wallow.
Mm-hmm. Bane gives his account of the events, ending the questioning with, who am I? Which, more fucking folding onto itself, storytelling that we were talking about earlier. And the crew finds Niobe and Ghost, and Niobe recounts her meeting with the Oracle, which, by the way, was in that fucking Enter the Matrix game that nobody who didn't play that game wouldn't know about.
Right.
Yeah.
the fucking stereotypical line, you know, what did the Oracle tell you? Exactly what I needed to hear. And then just walk away. Okay.
I mean, she does reveal what the Oracle told her later in the movie, but still, your point stands for sure. Nah, but at three movies in, it's fucking grating. Enough already.
Yeah.
Tell answers. Me what else. Yeah.
Yeah.
We need answers.
Yeah.
The Sentinels are on their way. We don't have time for this shit.
Exactly. Everyone on Zion is preparing for war as Z is making shells, and the kid is requesting permission to fight. Again, we are in this world getting acquainted with characters that give a shit about.
Okay. Another gripe I have with this movie. So, have we all seen The Room here?
No.
Yeah.
Garrett, watch The Room. Okay, well, you know the fucking Danny character, the kid alt, who's clearly like 30, but he's playing 15. Do you remember that guy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
He's one of the guys that they're tossing the football around, right?
Yeah, he's the one doing the drug deal and stuff.
He does a drug deal and fucking Tommy steps. Yeah.
Danny, you ruined your life. Oh, all that stuff.
Yes.
Okay, so this fucking kid from the Kid Story short, he's 18. He's playing 18 as if 18 is 11. They do this sometimes in movies, and I fucking hate it. No 18-year-old talks, acts, thinks like this fucking kid. I just, please, General, I sure would like to be in the army here if I could, because the machines don't care how old I am, so I want to get out there, gosh golly, good shit. I want to do it, Captain. Like, fuck you. Nobody talks like that.
Nobody talks like that.
Especially in the fucking future. It's, fuck this guy. Fuck this actor. Fuck this movie.
Neo comes in and requests that he take one of the ships to the Machine City. So this is like, people are assuming that this is just going to be suicide, right? But we know how the movie ends. But Neo, for some reason he knows. And this was a weird part about this movie for me, gentlemen, because you come into a movie like this, you're set up in two movies for basically to make a Star Wars reference, like the Rebels versus the Empire, right? Everybody's going to fight. Everybody's going to, and the Rebels are going to win, supposedly. But this is going to end with a truce. So is that part of the reason why people are so upset with these two sequels? Is instead of Neo saving the world by destroying them, he saves the world by calling a truce with everybody. And I think that's part of the reason why people were really upset with this movie.
Yeah, that's not a satisfying conclusion.
No, it's not.
It's just prolonging the story. Like, nothing ends then. You don't have an ending to your story, and that's a really bad way to end things, you know? It's messy. It's sloppy. I can't say it enough. This whole movie is fucking... Yeah. It's a mess.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a satisfying ending, but it's not the reason why I don't like this.
Niobe gives up her ship because she believes in the One, but she has never shown that belief.
Yeah, I think she just believes in Morpheus's dick. I think that's what she believes in. So.
Like that Larry Fish dick.
Oh, yeah.
As Alex and I have outlined, I love the Hugo Weaving impression that the actor playing Bane is giving as he's killing this member of the crew. I think it's pretty cool, but another cringe-inducing scene of Neo and Trinity is happening as Neo gives up that he is scared, and Trinity saying that she would give anything up for him. The stilted dialogue, holy shit.
Oh, between them, it's the worst.
Morpheus and Neo share their last scene together, and I do like how Morpheus like never wavers from his beliefs. It actually made me wish that these two had more scenes together in this movie, as Jack, you know, as we've pointed out, Morpheus does Jack shit in this movie, so...
It's a pretty good scene. I like those two characters together. Yeah, I do kind of wish they had more scenes together, but just to go back really quick to when Neo, however he finds out what he has to do, as this trilogy of movies goes on, so in the first movie, he gets all the information, figures things out. Second movie, he's just kind of like in the background of like, what's his fucking job, right? However he gets the information of what he has to do, like, we don't see any of that. It's really...
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really fucking shitty writing, because all you're doing is just telling us. You're not showing us what he has to do. You're telling... He just decides, like, oh, fuck, I need a ship. How did you... from where? Where did this idea come from?
He just kind of walks in that door and says, yeah, I need a ship. Yeah.
You're need a ship. Absolutely Sorry.
Right. Mm-hmm. There was nothing in that architect scene or anything that said, like, yeah, we need to go for peace. Like, there was nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's so my...
It's a great point.
That's my biggest problem I realized after finishing Revolutions was that the last two movies, Neo's just like this... Even though he's set up to be, like, the fucking Messiah, and he's the One, and this and that, there still is zero pathology to what he does. He just fucking does it, and everyone's just like, all right, well... He's the One, I guess.
No, it's a big problem, because it's kind of the same problem that you would have with Luke Skywalker. Or actually, we may find out if that's a problem with Luke Skywalker in December. But like Return of the Jedi, right? I mean, outside of the conclusion, as a Jedi Master, or at least, you know, an almost Jedi Master, he's not all that compelling.
No.
Because he's already learned what he has to, and Jedi, I love Return of the Jedi, but, you know, it's pretty clear that, like, some of the writing in it is a little, I don't know, less than the other two. But I think you have a problem when you take that character who, like, everybody relates to and is perfect and, you know, his goals are clear from the perspective of, you know, coming from something to the superhero. I don't think that the story of just the superhero being the superhero is always all that compelling, especially when it's God.
Yeah.
You know, this case, but I mean, just replace Neo for Superman and it's the exact same problem. So yeah. Why nobody can make a really great Superman story anymore is because there's no strife. But he can just know all things, see all things, be all things. I mean, he gets his eyes fucking gouged out. He can still see. I mean, what the fuck, man, you know? Or you can see when the script, it's convenient for him to see, I should say. But
Trinity goes down to check the fuse, and there's Bane waiting for her just in time to ram her head into the wall. And here's a big issue I have with this movie is you have spent two movies setting up Trinity as a pretty badass character. Well, a movie and a half. There was a part of the last film where she was pretty much nothing. This is the way she's going to go down. This guy's just going to ram her head into a wall, leave her in this hole while he goes up to fight Neo. Like, we've seen this broad take out like three or four people at once. And I understand where she's not jacked into the Matrix or whatever, but why take this such a strong female character and put her down in this way? I have no idea. Now she's just a damsel in distress, and she gets in the fucking way, and it's bothersome.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, like, what should we do with Trinity? I don't know. Just let her get smacked around by Bane Smith.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just an extension of the fucking Neo problem. You know, she's now here to just serve him. So
a gritty fight breaks out between these two, and Neo killing Bane while being completely blinded. I don't know. I like the fight just because of how gritty it is, and there's not really any music accompanying it or whatever, but we've spent too much time on this Bane character. Just too much time. Yeah. He should have been gone about a half hour, 45 minutes ago.
Well, that bothers me, but you know what really bothers me about this is when he sees Smith in, like, the fire gold vision or whatever. What the fuck is that? I mean, come on, you know?
Well, like, isn't he basically the train man then? Well, not so much the train man, but isn't he what the purpose of the train station is, which is it brings you from the Machine City to the Matrix?
Sure.
So he's that guy. He's a summation of being that character.
He
can see in the Matrix. Now he can see in the real world. And it's fucking stupid.
You know, they've always said that it's not a Matrix within a Matrix. Like, that was never the idea. And that it's something completely different from that, and blah, 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 blah. But my problem with it is, if it's not a Matrix within a Matrix, then this is just stupid. Like, this is just retarded.
I just don't understand how he's so special that he can see in Machine City.
And also, what is he seeing? Like, what is he seeing? That?
Yeah, I don't get it. Is that just biology? Is that what he's... Oh, God damn it.
Well, if it's biology, then I find it very interesting that he can see Agent Smith's fucking sunglasses, but it's... whatever.
Oh, the program?
Yeah, I just...
Oh, fucking program? Yeah, yeah. Doesn't have any biology at all?
That's what I'm saying.
My God, it's so fucking stupid. God damn it, I didn't think about that. Now this is... It's getting worse and worse.
Even worse.
I don't know how that was... That was fucking possible, but it is.
So what happens when you dissect a film, man? You look into the fucking holes, and they just grow bigger and bigger as you dissect it.
But then you get, like, I'm not saying for this movie, but other movies that kind of set up a whole universe, and then if you try to dissect it, everyone's like, well, you should just fucking watch the movie and let it entertain you. It's like, I'm not entertained by it, though.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't be entertained by stupidity.
The machines are in, breaching Zion with that damn drill that we saw back in the Flight of Osiris. With all these aliens, mech suits, they're attempting to take out the Sentinels. And I'm kind of exhilarated by these scenes, even if I, once again, don't feel for these characters. I like the way this looks. I like the faraway shots of those Sentinels coming down towards them. And I don't know, it's like, what is this, about 30 minutes of the film? 30, 40 minutes of this just just constant fighting. I do like these scenes. I like these scenes a lot, actually.
Yeah, this is a big part of why I hate this movie. I hate all of this shit. I'm incredibly bored by it. I don't like it for the same reason they don't like the Transformers shit. I just think it's fucking boring. It means nothing to me. I don't care about these characters. Doesn't particularly look good to me. It's all just the gunmetal gray colors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just looks like a fucking video game. I'm good. I'm good here. I don't want this. I don't need it. It's featuring characters I don't give a fuck about. I even remember feeling that way in the theater, seeing this, and I was like, wow, I'm just fucking bored. This is not good. Yeah, I fucking hate this whole sequence. I think it's stupid.
Dumb as fuck.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't like it. And I realized, initially, I had really liked Revolutions over Reloaded. And I think it had to do with just those action scenes and how it was just like nonstop carnage. It was just tedious watching it this time around.
Like those long shots that the Wachowskis do of the guns, like firing at the machines. You don't like that at all, really?
Nah.
To me, it was something to look at, and it was something I actually kind of liked.
Uh-huh. You know what bothered me about
some of my favorite scenes of the movie,
especially going from the first movie again. It's like you see these action scenes that are so well crafted. They're so meticulously put together. They're you know, real actors and real stunts, and everything has a very distinct style to it. When all of a sudden you go to this, and it's like there's this giant war happening I've never wanted out of these movies, and I just don't care. Like, you haven't given me any reason to root for anybody in Zion at all. Like, I wanted Neo to do well. I want Morpheus to be involved. It would be nice if Trinity did something. I don't give a fuck about anything else. And it especially is true even from the beginning of this movie with that other crew and that fucking gray-haired douchebag captain who's just, you know, a prick for prick's sake. You get to this point and it's too little too late. This is not the movie that I signed up for, and I'm not happy to get this as a bonus to whatever else is happening. It's not good.
As Z and her friend are making their way underground while Sentinels are on their trail, I'm taken right back to the droid factory to Attack of the Clones. Remember that, Jack?
When
they're going, that's what this kind of reminded me of. It's almost the exact same scene.
Awful.
Those tails just kind of whipping around and almost hitting them, and they're ducking and weaving. And I kind of got a kick out of that. Niobe, who we've gotten a little lip service about how good of a driver she is, steers her way through the exit. And the scope of this is huge, and I can admire that. But in the scheme of things, like, what do these machines have to do with that little Asian guy holding a set of keys from the last film? You know what I'm saying? Like, do we even care about the characters in the scope? That's a big issue.
Yeah, it's a big issue.
It's not tying together.
Absolutely. 100%.
That actually also is part of the reason why I don't care about Zion and whatever happens to it. There's no tangible connection.
So the gray-haired captain, as Jack calls him, Captain Mifune, he dies and tells the kid that it is now up to him to open the gate. It's a race against time, as in 2 minutes, the hammer is coming down. The hammer is just a ship, and it's his unofficial name, Mjolnir, which is a reference that most people wouldn't get for about another 6 years when Thor would hit theaters. So they make it through. Z and Link, they reunite. Commander Locke proves what he was put on this planet for, which is apparently just criticizing everything.
That's a good way to put it.
And he tells them that the EMP that took out all the hardware, well, it also took out their defenses, and Morpheus once again proves how big of a Neo fanboy he is by defending him, saying he's doing what he feels he must do. This Commander Locke, he's been a stick in the mud the entire fucking series. I have no affiliation to him whatsoever. The stuff with Captain Mifune and the kid, what the fuck? Ugh, you guys are right. It's like, I can't find myself caring for any of these characters except for the characters I'm supposed to care about. And even that's starting to deteriorate in these last two films. It's just, it's grating. Meanwhile, Neo, remember him? He's a blindfolded driver, a.k.a. a California driver, heading to Machine City. You like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good.
Good one.
Thank you. They're making their way through Sentinels, then up through the sky until they come down and Trinity gets punctured by the machines. I do like the scene of Trinity right before she dies seeing that there is kind of life at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. I do like that. I think that's kind of a good moment for me. I don't know. You guys seem to be quiet about it.
No, I mean, it's okay. I do kind of like her reaction to it. I mean, it's It's like one of the only truths in the whole series. Outside of just like there being a machine city and electrical sky, and there's still sort of blue skies ahead, sir.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about when they crest above the clouds, you mean?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, I fucking hate this scene. Yeah, no, this is stupid. This is fucking stupid. I don't like it. I don't agree with it. I think it's a dumb move at this stage in the game. You know, all you're going to do is fucking impale her in a couple of minutes, so why?
Yeah, check out that fucking sunset, son.
Oh, great.
That's great. Why.
Good for her and everybody else involved. Fuck this scene. This is stupid. It's
another stupid I scene. Have less stupid problems movie. With this scene than the scene following it.
Yeah.
I was we agree.
The worst fucking scene. The worst dialogue. Probably in a trilogy of bad dialogue, that could be the next scene is probably the fucking worst one.
It is so bad. It is so bad. And why take, again, this badass heroine to die in his arms like this? Oh my God, that was enraging.
And not so much that, it's just the dialogue. She's like, I have to tell you something. You fucking told him in the first movie. Uh-huh. I love you. Well, I got to tell you again. I love you.
The Oracle shut up. The Oracle told me this very specific set of things would happen. And when they did, then I would have to remind you of what I said.
Yeah.
A couple years ago in the other ship when, you know, we weren't about to die. So here you go.
Neo member? Remember?
Open a fucking window. Holy shit. This really stinks.
It's fucking horrible.
I was half expecting the cliche of like Neo looking up at the clouds and saying, no! Like, it was like right? That close to happening. Mm-hmm. Like, ugh.
That would have been an improvement.
Yep. It's just like what all the dialogue with Captain Mifrom. Cranky guy and fucking Commander Locke. They're all doing what we've seen 1,000 times in any kind of battle scene, war scene. It's just, it's repetitive, it's awful, and I can't believe that when you're sitting there writing dialogue that you just land on that and go, okay, that's fine. Yeah. It's just fucking awful. I don't believe in miracles. Shut up.
Nobody makes his way to, I guess this would be the machine god. I couldn't find what they...
His character name is Deus Ex Machina, so there's that.
Oh my God.
And seriously, like, first movie, very creative. They start to set up this whole universe, and there's a fucking Deus Ex Machina. Like, that's their big conclusion of who controls everything. It's fucking awful, man. It's such a cop-out that they use that.
He finds a way to negotiate a truce with Deus Ex Machina by saying Smith is now out of control, and if they do in fact call peace between the factions, Neo will help them fight the Smith program. Then I think, I'm going to probably be solo on this, but I think it kind of picks up. I do like the, as they call it on the Blu-ray special features, they call it the Super Burly Brawl. It's incredibly exciting for me. It's Neo and Smith meet amongst huge raindrops. By the way, these raindrops are meant to be so big because it's supposed to be like a fallen program. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, okay, that's what I was wondering about. Because, you know, there are like hundreds and hundreds of Smiths that are everywhere. So I just thought it was like he was a virus that just spread himself throughout the program or throughout the Matrix. But are they not in the Matrix or are they like in a separate other?
No, they're in the Matrix.
They're in the Matrix. Yeah. Okay.
Garrett, I agree with you. The way that they get to this sucks. And the result of this sucks.
Yeah.
But most of this scene is pretty awesome. I don't think... Put it this way. Nothing in any of these movies compares to the first one, okay? Having said that, I think this is the best scene of these two sequels for me.
Was I the only one, Jack, who got like a Superman versus Zod vibe from these two just fighting
through absolutely. Buildings? I mean, this is probably the scene with the most direct references to things. I mean, they lift exact shots from Akira, from Ninja Scroll. They lift an overhead shot from Ghost in the Shell. Like, all their main influences are present in this fight scene. And I think it works as a fight scene. Now, if you want to get into it, as soon as Agent Smith starts losing, you got to ask the question, how the fuck would he ever allow that to happen if there are a million of them all over the place?
But yeah.
It's not the worst scene of these movies for me.
It definitely has an epic grand scheme feel to it, which I enjoyed.
It's fine up until they're in that like crater in the street.
Yes.
And they're in like super, yes, super slow motion.
Yeah.
And they look rubbery and fake and they don't even look like the actors.
He's punching, mm-hmm, so hard that you can see him punch the raindrops. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Smith asked Neo if he even knows why he's fighting. And this is when I start feeling like this is the Oracle that Smith had taken over. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that last, yeah, shot is supposed to symbolize that.
Okay. And how something as insipid as love serves no purpose to persist on fighting. And he then does something he hasn't done for three straight films. He actually calls Anderson Neo, which is what gave it away for me, that this was the actual Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
And Smith now acts afraid, though when he takes over Neo's body, he does exactly what's needed as he helps Neo accomplish his mission of sacrificing himself for the complete annihilation of the Smith program. Something I actually didn't see coming. I didn't see this, like when he took him over in the theater, I was like, holy shit. And I didn't even think that this is exactly what he wanted. You guys don't like this conclusion, I take it, Jack? You don't really like this?
In theory, it's a very cool idea. And it, mm-hmm, completely plays into the architect scene from the last movie.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea. You know, it's like everything else in this fucking movie. I like the idea. The execution fucking sucks. Because they don't, in my opinion, they don't do enough to set it up. It happens, and it achieves a result. But, you know, Neo's supposed to be the savior, right? He's supposed to be the Jesus character and you know, free people and all that stuff and save Zion. He 100% fails in his mission. And I think that's part of why I don't like these sequels. Think about how this movie ends, okay? The Matrix is reset. Zion is left alone for now. But people are still being used as batteries. They're still enslaved. He's made minimal change on the environment.
At the end, when the Oracle and the Architect are talking, part of that truce was she says something that the people that are plugged into the Matrix are given a choice, whether or not they want to stay plugged in or not.
Fucking what? What the fuck? What is that? I can't. I'm not even going to touch it. I'm not even going to touch that. That's so fucking stupid. It's so stupid. You know what it is? It's just a lack of substance. It's somebody sitting in front of a fucking thesaurus and they're like, okay, I need this character to sound smart. Okay, I need this character to sound mysterious. Let's have him talk. What's a good fucking word for perseverance? Verisimilitude. Okay, put that in there. You know, like, fuck that. It's so fucking stupid. They have a choice. No, they don't! Ah, fuck this movie.
Also, how do they get across the idea of people who are plugged into the Matrix? Like, do you want to stay plugged in or not?
What's that?
And that's going to blow everybody's mind. They're probably going to fucking go into cardiac arrest, right? Because they're going to be like, what? I'm plugged into a computer program? What are you what?
Like, what is that process? You know, I mean, do they
just need to see that workflow.
Do they have somebody come up to them? Just like on their 21st birthday, they're like, hey, so here's the thing. You've been living inside a simulation.
Yeah.
And now you can get out of it if you want. It's pretty cool here, but you will be getting a pretty steady job on the other side. Maybe a little more labor intensive, but there is, mm-hmm, gruel. You know, we don't.
There's
have
gruel you can eat. You'll smell really bad, but you'll be free.
Yeah. And also, there's probably you're gonna need a few sweaters, but I think they have some hanging around from, you know, the other humans who have probably died before you got there of, you know, various, mm-hmm, diseases and attacks.
I got it.
So what do you think?
They create a Morpheus program that does that. He just goes around, like in the beginning of the Matrix, the first one, being like, hey, there's a computer simulation. You want to be free? Take the red pill. And then you got this other blue pill.
Okay, so right there, that all of a sudden is making me more interested in the story. Because Then, think about it, though. Then is Neo just enacting some, like, cyclical fucking thing that he's done a million times? And if so, what does that mean, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's all interesting. There are pieces of interesting shit, these two sequels. I think that's the thing that kills me most, is, like,
mm-hmm.
I can't really believe that the guys who made the first movie made the next two.
Yeah, there's such a big drop-off.
Yeah, but I guess they're not guys anymore, so that explains it.
The full creative control was given to them, too. It's not like they didn't make the movie they wanted to make. It's not like the studio interfered with anything.
That's true, yep.
Yeah, because that always works out so well.
Yeah, exactly. They were given carte blanche. They were giving as much money as they wanted to do what they wanted with these things. And to have it end like this, again, Jack, I really like the idea. I do like the idea of a sacrifice being given for a truce. I do like that is what the one is defined as. In this grand scheme of things, that is what he is. I do like that idea. But the way they get to it, and the long-windedness, and the way Trinity is just negated as fuck in this movie, it blows my mind. It really just blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Oracle says she suspects that they will, in fact, see Neo again as credits roll for the final time. Or do they? We'll talk about that in a minute. But for now, go ahead and get the scores. Scale of 1 to 10, what do you give it? I want to go to Alex first.
Oh, man. This was fucking rough. This was rough. There's not a lot for me to formulate a positive rating on this. I mean, there are definitely things that I like about it. There's a lot of ideas I like. The way it looks, I think, is fine, outside of a couple of things here and there. This is a fucking 3 on 10, man. This
is bad. Jack?
Do you remember what I gave Reloaded?
You gave it a 5.
Yeah, I think you gave it a 5. I think I gave it a 4.
Yeah, Revolutions gets a 2. This movie fucking sucks. This is like textbook what you don't fucking do when you're making a sequel and you're trying to make it smart. Like, you need to have a good fucking idea, and you need to have it well thought out before you start filming your fucking movie, okay? I'm sorry, but these movies were filmed back-to-back. They were filmed in such close proximity that somehow the actress who plays the Oracle died, and they didn't have a plan in place to do anything about it. It just seems really strange. There's a lot of little shit I can't fucking tolerate. I don't think that the acting's good. I don't like where the story goes. I like the one fight scene. There are decent ideas throughout, but there's a lot that's left on the table. I don't think they explore the things that they should. Fucking movie sucks. It's a 2 on 10. Fuck this movie. This is the last time I'm watching it. I'm done.
Yeah, I'll never watch it again.
I think,
or maybe we should watch him again. We just start backwards. Start third. And then we'll watch Reloaded, and then we'll watch the original one.
It'd be a way better aftertaste, I'll tell you that. Going on a fucking high note.
I'll tell you this, boys. The biggest crime of this movie is that by the end of it, it negates everything I liked about that last film, and even some of what I liked about that first film. That's a huge crime to me. There are parts of this that I really like. I like that ending scene so much. I like some of the conflict in it. I'm the only one on this podcast who liked the Zion stuff. I found that exhilarating. But man, to get to where they get, and all the faults of those Wachowskis just came out in full. Dialogue, needless action scenes, which that club hell, I didn't really talk about that scene too much, but my God, that is so needless, that whole scene. It's just
absolutely
cut it out. So this will get a 4 out of 10. Ooh. But... Ooh. What the worst thing is, it also puts my rating of Matrix Reloaded down a couple. It's that's now a 6 for me because of how much they just folded their own theories onto themselves, and it's grating. That's the worst part. I think they were ambitious. They needed to be reined in a little bit. Somebody needed to look at the script and say, okay, we need to do this, this, this. I don't think Silver did that. I think he just said, okay, we're going to give these people what they want because people need a new Matrix. Go do what you want. And that was the worst thing. We might not be over, boys. We might be reforming in a couple years to talk more Matrix because there is talk. And this started happening around the time Jupiter Ascending was coming out, which I guess they were already seeing the stinkness of that film. And they're saying that the Wachowskis, they're notoriously tight-lipped, but they are, in fact, working on not a sequel, but a trilogy of Matrix films. What do you guys feel? You guys think we could do more with this Matrix, or are we done? Are we just completely done with this series?
I wonder if they would do it like an exact remake, or would they expand on it?
No. Just as recently as March, he's been saying that they don't think of it as a reboot. They're doing almost like a continuation.
Oh, so they would do another version of Neo, I would guess.
That'd right? be my guess.
Yeah. That would make the most sense. How can you have like reboot the franchise, not a typical reboot, but like without having the quote unquote one character? I don't know. I don't know if that could work.
Yeah. let's work on some original stories, people. Come on. This had its time. Started good. It died. A horrible death. Just let it be dead.
Doesn't Elon Musk or somebody believe that we're in a computer simulation?
I'm sure somebody does.
I will just go ahead and say this is what I started with the first podcast of the series. I think that first Matrix film really negated a lot of what's good about the Wachowskis. I think the Wachowskis just, they wanted to keep upping themselves and trying to top themselves. It started with these sequels, and it just got progressively worse, although I do think Jupiter Ascending is a little bit underrated. Not too much. It's got a lot of stupid shit in it, but I do like parts of that. I did like Cloud Atlas. I thought that was underrated. I think they have good ideas, but give them like a minimal budget. Give them like a budget they had on Bound or something. Like have them write something that is actually interesting to not just look at but listen to, and I might be there for it. But I think there was these Wachowskis. I think their careers just kind of, they were helped by that first Matrix movie, but eventually they just didn't think their shit stank and just kept going higher and higher with these grand scheme ideas, and they faltered. All right, boys. So I guess that does it for this Matrix series. I appreciate you guys taking the journey with me.
Absolutely.
It's been over a month, almost two, going over this series. But it's been fun doing it with you guys. Next on the Aftertaste, we're gonna go into Halloween with the Chucky series. Me and a filmmaker friend of mine, Doug Wicker, are gonna delve deep into the Chucky series. And after that, me, Nate, and Jim Law are going to go take a ride on The Exorcist. So,
whoa.
All four of those films, yep.
Aren't there more than four?
Well, yeah, we're going to talk about that. Oh, yeah, okay. there's actually five, but yeah. One of them's the same movie again.
Right, it gets weird.
All right, boys, I appreciate it. All three of us are going to do a series two pretty soon. We're going to talk about what one we want to do next, but I love doing these podcasts with you guys. I'll see you soon. Thanks.
Thanks, GC.
Yeah, peace. Bye.
See
you.
Without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
I always thought that the actor who plays Bane did a pretty good job of capturing Hugo Weaving's, like, his cadence and the way he talks and everything.
Yes. Yeah. Possibly.
That was pretty good.
That's probably why he got hired.
Probably.
Like, yeah. You act? No. I can. I sound like fucking Agent Smith, though. All right, you're hired.
Penis man.
were you gonna say, Jack? I'm sorry.
No, I can't remember. Where were we in the story now? So he's.
Well,
the stilted dialogue. Holy shit!
Oh, that between would, them, it's the worst.
It'd just be a great time for him to like come back. You know, she'd be like, "I'd do anything for you," and he'd be like, "Including anal."
Give me that ass. I can't see it, but I know it's there.
Oh man. You know, she's now here to just serve him, so
yeah.
Also, way better movie is if Bane was actually Bane. So it was like, oh, hello, Trinity.
Oh, Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Anderson. That'd be way better.
Mr. Anderson, it's your reckoning, Mr. Anderson.
Yeah. I can't be entertained by stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, part of the reason why I hate the Transformers.
Sure.
Yeah.
What were you going to say? I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say that's not entirely true. I kind of fucking love a couple Adam Sandler movies, so.
Maybe we'll do a Sandler retrospective.
Nope. Nope.
Oh.
I'll do Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore, and then you shut the fuck up.
Hey, I'd bat for Big Daddy.
Okay, well, good for you.
Yeah, Big Daddy's okay.
You've been listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on BingeMedia.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Buy some merch at BingeMedia.net/shop. Subscribe to our newsletter at BingeMedia.net/newsletter. And don't forget,
I can't get enough of soup.
Bob Odenkirk.